We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. Big time thanks for sharing us with your friends, family, and associates. It's helping to grow the show, not only here in the States, but internationally. And you know what? We appreciate it very, very much. Now, today, one of the biggest things that people kind of move into and don't realize is that loneliness has reached epidemic levels across the country. The numbers aren't slowing down. Even as our lives get more digitally crowded, meaningful relationships are thinning out. Friendship expert and connection coach Shari Lead has been tracking this shift, you know, up close and personal. She offers a framework for turning, you know, here we are, 2026, 3 months into the year, a way for people to rebuild their social world with intention. Shari, she started in a cardboard box. I mean, she was found as a baby in South Korea. She eventually flipped that box and delivered tables for connecting, sharing meals with people across 50 states. Her expertise featured on NBC's Today Show, ABC, CBS. She's a regular on all media. Now, she's a former litigator, turned speaker, author, community builder. Shari teaches that connection isn't optional. It's a life skill. Her flip the box method, her new book, Table for 51, which came out in 2025, gives readers practical, repeatable tools for creating belonging in a noisy, disconnected culture. Americans need to rethink how they want their lives to feel in the years ahead. Her guidance offers grounded, hopeful roadmaps for creating real community, one intentional step at the time. You know, this is so very, very important. Shari, I want to thank you so much for being here. I was talking about you and what you do with my wife, and we were just thinking about our kids. You know, they're driven work. You see social media, but there's not really connection in social, not physical connection. And everything it seems to be transactional. And having a deep bond and relationships are really hard to come by. So this is something very, very special. So thank you for being here and helping us all out.
Absolutely. And I love that you started out by mentioning your kids, because I think we're probably around the same generation here. And I have kids as well. And I think our generation has done such a good job, unfortunately, of teaching the next generation how to disconnect. And we really need to do our work to not only find connection for ourselves, but also to model connection for our next generation of young people, young adults that are coming through, so that we can start cutting into this epidemic of loneliness that we have that is so prevalent in our country, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our rooms, in our families.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know what? What's really interesting is my daughter went to college in Idaho, decided to stay there, thought she'd stay there because she hated California, but then realized that's not what she wanted and cut ties with everything, came back here to California. But now she's rebuilding that friend piece. Mm. And when you look at it, you know what? I work a lot. So they work a lot just because they're example the dad and all that kind of stuff. They work hard. They do very well and they're, you know, very well compensated and all that kind of stuff. But it's the social side of things that are not there because of Facebook, texting, things like that.
And the virtual workplace, what I really worry about as well is when you think of our younger people as they get older, usually, typically we met and we established friendships in the workplace and we didn't have virtual meetings. And I really worry about our sons. And when they get to the age of retirement and if they haven't established these friendships, because historically men, as they, after they leave work, as they get older, they become lonelier because they have not had these skills for making friendships that maybe women are encouraged to do. That being said, women are struggling just as much now, if not even more than ever before, on making friendships or making friends.
That's so true. So now, many people are looking for relationships, more meaningful stuff. In fact, for many, it was the New Year's resolution. Mm. Problem is, they don't have any, you know, how do we go about making that connection? So that's why we have you here. So what would be the first step for getting going with that?
Yeah, first of all, I couldn't believe during the introduction when you said we are in the third month of 2026. So if that was a New Year's resolution, it's time to get on it. You know, I'm walking the talk now. I moved from Seattle, from the West Coast. Like, you're on the West Coast. I moved to Dallas, Texas at the end of September without any anchor, without any roots here, no friends, nothing. And so I'm walking the talk. Mm-hmm. So number one, it has to be intentional. It can't happen. It can't happen just by sitting at home. So there are three things that I say if you're going into a new community or if you want to establish more friends, and I'm going to say these, and these are going to seem really overwhelming to somebody who's an introvert. And I know that, and we'll back up after this. But one, you have to get to your place where you're going to meet people. And to do that, I would suggest joining something physical, whether it's a walking group, a gym, a class that you're interested in, something that causes you to move. It takes the pressure off of you and it's something that you enjoy. Two, join either a nonprofit group, a philanthropy group, something where, you know, it could be a volunteer thing, a give back, mm-hmm. right? And three, the third one is maybe some type of career or business group. So these are all three different types of interests. It exposes you to a number of different people. Not everyone's going to land. It's a numbers game, to tell you the truth. I mean, you might meet 50 people and one person's going to stick to some level. So the first step is simply to get out there. And I just give those examples of ways that you can diversify your friendships. And just because you go to one meeting, if it's not your jam, you don't have to stay, mm-hmm. you know, but it's getting into this practice. And quite honestly, it takes practice. And also, the more you practice, the easier it gets. And you start to realize that everyone feels the same way as you walking into a room, whether or not you're an introvert or an extrovert. Extroverts tend to just be more used to getting rejected mm-hmm. than introverts might be. Or it doesn't hit us in the same way.
Oh, it's so funny you say that because it reminds me of like when my wife took to, there was a mom's mothers of preschoolers. They would go play together and stuff like that. And one of the moms goes, oh my God, my kid's eating crayons. So, I mean, he's going to be crazy. And they're like, oh, don't worry. That happens to my kid all the time. Yeah. And you realize everybody's in the same boat.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And I had traveled in 2023 across the U.S., shared a meal with a stranger in every state. And it was to write this last book, Table for 51, was part of it. So I would tell these, they were all women. I told them beforehand, I'm writing this book. I'm hoping to get some publicity for it. I thought the one objection was going to be, that would continue, would be, oh, thank you, but I'm a private person. Instead, the objection that kept reoccurring was, I don't know if I'm interesting enough for you. And one that hurt my heart because I was just this person from Seattle with a personal project, you know, and it was an organic conversation. But two, it made me realize that's the message that so many of us have in our heads when we walk into a room that's stopping us from simply going over and saying hello to somebody, thinking we don't have enough to give or to say.
So I think the message there is you are enough. Mm-hmm. And you need to be part of it. I heard that at a National Charity League where somebody was giving a talk for these girls that are moving forward and it's the philanthropy and stuff like that. And one of the biggest things was to make sure these girls understood they were enough.
Yes. And when I do keynote speeches, what I call power tools for connection, the foundational phrase is don't focus on you, focus on who. And when we don't focus on ourselves and we take that pressure off ourselves to show up and we focus on you to get to know you, mm-hmm. it becomes easier. And if you approach with curiosity as opposed to the fear of, oh, how am I showing up? What judgment? That practice, it starts to happen automatically the more you practice it.
I think that's wonderful. Hey, folks, we just heard the aha of the moment. So stick with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. We're getting right back to it with Shari Lee. We're talking about connections. One of the big ahas we just had in the first segment was just know that you're enough. And what Shari was saying is focus on getting to know that other person when you talk to them. It's about, as opposed to worrying about, will you be enough? Because you will be. And I think that's wonderful. So when you're getting to know somebody else, okay, because how to put it, I grew up as an executive in my previous life. So I was taught to ask questions, but it was more, you know, met so many congenial people. Okay. Mm-hmm. In fact, I live in an area of executives. So every time you went to a party, it was the same questions and I knew what they're going to say. And people get the same answers. You're like, okay, I don't really know that person.
Yeah.
So how does somebody go about asking questions? And, you know, how do those are something that's really important because people don't have that ammunition, so to speak.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And a lot of it, again, when we don't focus on you, focus on who. Another foundational phrase for you is don't listen to reply, listen to identify. And what I mean by that is listen to identify. When somebody says something, listen to what they're saying. What's the story under what they said? You know, what's the follow-up question that you can ask to get to know what the meaning is behind that just a little bit more, as opposed to listening to reply, where because we ask these similar questions, we think, okay, we might be subconsciously thinking, oh, we know the answer. So I'm going to say this and tell them what I do and tell them what I did today, where I'm going on my trip next. We already have our set answers. Instead, how about we go and think, I'm not going to listen. Don't listen to reply. Listen to identify. Identify what's the hidden story under there? What's the hidden meaning? You know, my dad was a math teacher. His second career, he was a math teacher for the deaf. And he, like most teachers, was handed a textbook saying, this will work. He taught at a college level in Seattle Central Community College. Well, the math book didn't work. And it wasn't because his students weren't eager to learn or curious. It was because the language was written in standard English form. And many of his students were born deaf or they lost their hearing early in life. And American Sign Language also doesn't necessarily follow regular English structure. So he was a former engineer and he would draft and changed the language, and he ended up publishing his own math books. And what I realized was my dad was not a great, I mean, he was a great math teacher, but the thing was he was a great communicator because he focused on not what needs to change in the person, but what do I need to change in the message so that the message lands. And that's, you know, don't listen to reply, listen to identify. Identify what the meaning is underneath what the person's saying, and identify how you need to speak or communicate so that your message lands with this particular person. So then it becomes fun. You're really interested to gain to know them. And what's our communication style? You know, if you said you were a CEO and this is what you did in a previous life, I may think, okay, there's an anchor there. This is how I'm going to talk to him because this is the way, you know, he has functioned. Versus if you said, I was an artist. I was, you know, running around the beaches and painting sunsets. I might talk to you about something entirely different.
Oh, yeah. I totally get that. So basically what you're saying is when somebody starts saying that, you know, we went on our first trip to Europe.
Yeah.
Instead of saying,
I went on my first trip to blah, blah, blah. I'll say, oh, really? How did you choose that country? You know, why did you choose Italy instead of Scotland or something like that? Or how long have you been there? Or have you gone to any other countries over there? I mean, find the story under why, you know, what was behind this trip to Europe and why now? If this is your first trip, was it a special occasion? Why now?
Yeah. Also, what was your best experience there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to replying, right? Oh, I went there and I did this and I did this there, you know?
So often people want to have a response. They're already thinking in their head, many people are thinking in their head, what am I going to say next? What am I going to say next? As opposed to, wow, that's pretty cool. So what was the funnest thing? Why did you go there? How did that make a difference? How long did you stay? Were you at a good hotel?
Yeah. Well, you know, they say they often, you know, you've probably heard people say, well, learning improv is such a good skill, you know, learning improv because you do these different examples and exercises. It's such a good skill. Well, it's not just improv, it's communication, because what you're learning in improv is you have to listen to the person ahead of you. You can't have a preset idea of what you're going to do. Otherwise, that improv fails. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're talking about here, is actually listening. Because once you stop actually listening and start talking to instead of communicating, that communication breaks down and it becomes awkward.
Yes. And that's where everybody looks at the ceiling. And
yeah, it's like, okay, that conversation ended.
Well, the other part is you can tell if somebody's doing some really good listening and responding, that they really care about understanding you, and it makes it so mm-hmm. much easier for them to open up and you to have a conversation. And the reality is there might not be anything there, but there also might be something there as a friend. And mm-hmm. then, you know what, you continue that on. Am I correct, or am I assuming here?
Yes, no, you're at, and you learn something. Whether or not you end up connecting as, you know, best friends, or it's just that one time meeting, you're going to learn something. I'm a strong believer that everyone we meet is our teacher and our student. So, you know, you lead in with curiosity, you're going to learn something from that communication, that meeting of that person.
We started that connection. What's kind of like the next little step after that?
So the final one, I'm glad you asked. See, we didn't even plan this, but I'm glad you asked, because there are three. The third one is don't choose control, choose the soul. And what I mean by that is choose the person, the heart in front of you, because so many times we focus on the person. Right. We focus on the who, we listen, but then we go into control mode, especially if you're like, you know, the people you're talking about that you associate with high level, they're functioning at this high level where they are managing teams, they're in charge, they're, you know, whether even mom's staying at home, right? They're managing their families, they're moving. So it's so easy to go listen, to focus, listen, and then control. And that's when we lose contact. And so instead of control, choose the soul, meaning choose to connect and leave a connection to that person. And I, you know, I don't know if we have time right now, if we have time in another segment, but I can give you a very good example of that, especially for
parents. Oh, please give me an example. We've got time.
Okay. Okay. So I learned this lesson myself with my own daughter, because what happened is we adopted, my ex-husband and I adopted our daughter from China, found out 2 weeks later I was pregnant and we had our son, which was shocking. But turned out to be a blessing, because we learned that her development, she had some special needs, because he was developing on an expected course and she was falling behind. And I did what many parents would do. I focused on her. I listened to what was needed. And then I went to control mode, you know, and it was out of fear. I scheduled, managed everything. And the more I
controlled,
you try to bring, for lack of better words, up to par. And the more I tried to control, and this is in any relationship, this is just one example, but it could be in any relationship. The more you try to control, you'll notice you end up separating. It does the exact opposite thing. The person starts to back away. The intimacy isn't there. The relationship you want is not there, because it doesn't feel good to be controlled and somebody's not listening at that point. So that's when I learned, and I flipped it to, instead of controlling, to choose the soul, to choose connection. And I realized I didn't lose influence at that point. Instead, I gained the right to influence, to walk beside, and things became easier. And if I led with, okay, I need to connect to find out exactly what's needed here, then all that other stuff that didn't make sense, that was hindering, seemed to fall away. Mm-hmm. And I think this is good advice for, you know, relationships in general, with managers of teams, you know, who listen, they focus on their team, they listen to the problems, and then they go into control and they lost that connection that they just tried to build up.
Mm-hmm. When they should be asking questions and seeking to understand and allowing that to flow the direction everybody rolls into.
Yeah. And that's when you gain, you know, you don't lose the right to guide, you gain the right to guide, and you become a better guide, because you are actually connected to those you're guiding, instead of out here doing your own thing of what you think is the right way to do it on your journey. But mm-hmm. the team you're working with, they may have totally different skills than what you are attributing to them in what you're planning. But if you stay connected, you can see those things and those options better. And that's even with friendships. You know, when, if you go in and you go, oh man, this person is so great, and get excited because you got this new friend, but then you go into control mode, that friend's leaving. As opposed to connection mode. And we've seen this with our own kids, right? Sometimes with kids, all of a sudden they have a friend and they're good at making friends. But then for some reason, friends keep leaving. It's because that kid a lot of times gets so excited that the other person feels overwhelmed, because it went into control mode.
Oh, this is really an eye-opener for a lot of people. Shari, thank you for being here with us today. So we've been talking about, here's the steps, here's the tools. The big thing is to not try to control. And the next part we were going to talk about is like changing your story. So help us understand the context of changing your own story.
Yeah. So give you a little story to put this into context. You mentioned in the intro that I had been found in a cardboard box. I'd been orphaned as a child. And so I was found without any identifying information. I don't know my actual birth date, my family name, nothing. And so what do you do when you don't know your birth story? You make one up, right? So I've had three birth stories in my life, and I'll do this as succinctly as possible. My first one was as a child in kindergarten. I announced my kindergarten class that I was the prince. I was a princess from Korea. And for a while, I ruled recess like it was my kingdom. I was the princess of recess until I got in trouble. And to make a long story short, I stopped saying that story. So that's birth story number one. Birth story number two came in my 30s when I was diagnosed with hip dysplasia. And I asked the doctor, the third surgeon, that said, you need two full hip replacements. I said, what causes hip dysplasia? He said, well, a common cause is a breached birth. I thought, I have bad directional sense. That makes sense. And so I had a second story that was a little bit more morbid than the first story. It didn't involve any princesses, and it involved this sad, sad story about my birth mother. I won't go into it, but that was my second story that I told with some humor. And it wasn't until about 10 years later that I attended a friend's party. I started telling the story I tell now. That I carry now, my birth story. And there was a psychic involved, and she told me a story that basically said that my parents were young, they were in love, they wanted to marry. My mother came from a family of means and importance in the community, and her family said no, but you were born, meaning me, in love and from a family of importance. Blew her off at the party. Next day, though, I was driving to work, and I felt myself sit up taller. Something had shifted, and I realized it didn't matter if that story was true or not. It was the first time in my life that I even thought that I was born in love, that I came from a family of importance, and it shifted something in me. And our brains don't necessarily know the difference between what's vividly imagined and what's real. And so the stories you tell yourself changes everything about yourself. And so I ask people, what story are you telling yourself about yourself? And when you talk about friendships, I hear so many times people saying, I'm an introvert, I'm an extrovert. Well, I'm not discounting that at all, but what I'm saying is that stopping you from walking into a room? Because it's interesting, when somebody says they're an extrovert, they automatically believe that they can make friends, a lot of them, wherever they go. And a lot of times my introvert clients that I work with, they say I'm an introvert, they have this belief system that they've inherited that it's harder for them to make friends. And I would suggest maybe you just make friends in a different way than the extrovert. And maybe perhaps those friendships that you make become deeper, quicker. There's some skill that happens that with the way, you know, so-called introverts, so-called extroverts, the way we think or do things in life. So that's my question. If you're having trouble making friendships, what story are you telling yourself? Because the story you tell yourself changes everything about yourself.
And I think that's really interesting because I grew up in a world of sports. And some of the better people who play sports, they were also, everybody talked to them and they were extroverts. Mm-hmm. They can talk to everybody, interact with everybody, but I can't say they were better friends with anybody. Mm-hmm. So everything sometimes was congenial. And then I find out some of my extroverted friends or introverted friends, things are far more deeper because they take the time to get to understand because they know that relationships are important. And it's really hard to find somebody that fits. So we find out that they have a group. And my son's that way because he has the same group of friends that he had in high school, except for one or two. And they travel, they go places. But more importantly, it was really interesting because when my daughter was living in Idaho, okay, she was dealing with all the stuff there. She went to Japan with them. Okay. And they toured Japan and all that stuff. And she says, you know what? This is the first time I didn't have to be a parent. And I actually had conversations with people about everyday things, things that were important to her and them and all that kind of stuff. And she really got to know people. So it was a different type of group. Mm-hmm. And it became very easy from an introvert person to become friends with those people because they value the relationship and they value that, you know, understanding, seeking to understand as opposed to let me regurgitate what I did yesterday.
And sometimes it does take getting to a new place, right? There's something special about if you're able to travel internationally or, you know, to a new area to be able to sort of recreate your story, as opposed to when you're in the same group of people, you kind of are living this identity that's already created for you. But, you know, and so that's the question is like, what story am I telling myself? Like, why do I think, let's just use introvert, for example, and tying introvert to it's harder for me to make friends, or there's no way I can walk into the room. Or she just said you should join 3 groups. There's no way, you know, and completely shut down. Where does that come from? What's the underlying meaning? Who told you that you were an introvert? Are you really an introvert? And what is an introvert? What does that mean? How does that show up? Is that negative when it comes to friendships, or is it actually a positive tool? I mean, what are the stories we're telling ourselves and where is that coming from? The beauty of being this age is we can start chipping away at, you know, it's like Michelangelo, and he says, you know, with David, he didn't create David. He chipped away with all the pieces that no longer fit or didn't fit. Mm-hmm. And at this age, I think that's the work we're doing now. We've been piled on so many stories. You're this, you're that, and especially all these people who are so successful and you know, have this kind of checklist life. We have been performers and we've gotten to this good life and we end up going, okay, well, who really are we underneath all of this? I'm carrying my mom's story, my school story, my, you know, workplace, my titles, everything. So we're at this place at this age where now it's time to chip away from all of those pieces that aren't necessarily, they got us to where we need to be, but they're not necessarily ours to continue to carry.
That's really great. Because if you don't have to carry it, it makes it so much easier to just be you.
Yes. And I always say, you know, a lot of times we let a good life stop us from a great life. Meaning, you know, there's so much, you know, I'm 56 right now. And there's so much more that I want to do. And I think I know myself better now than I did in my 40s and my 30s. I'm sure I'll be saying the same thing in my 60s and 70s that I know myself then better than I do now. But it's about chipping away from all the pieces, because for a very long time, I let a good life stop me from a great life because it was comfortable and it was what everyone else expected. But same with friendships, right? Sometimes we're carrying these stories and things are good and we're afraid to have exposed ourselves to who we really are and play with it a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, because you know what, when you said, you know, it's about the story you tell, mm-hmm. but you can tell your story in a different way. It's just a little bit more positive. And one of the things that keeps reminding me is I had one mentor in a mastermind group where we talked about, you know, having your mind in the right mindset. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You might have had the worst day of the week, but at the end of the day, there's a few things you accomplished, mm-hmm. and you write those down. I did this, I accomplished that. And you leave with a positive day as opposed to taking it home that night. And you start with what you're going to accomplish and, you know, see where you're at the end of the day. And I find that to be a very positive thing. So when you're, I'm not to say self-talking, but mm-hmm. telling your story, whatever it is, tell it in a positive light, because mm-hmm. people see it on your face.
Yeah. And you feel it, right? One of the things I say to myself every day when I wake up is today is going to be easy. And so that, you know, and I remind myself about that throughout the day when it gets hard. I'm like, okay, no, I said today was going to be easy. And it just reminds me, you know, to when things feel overwhelming, what's the easiest first step? And that's something too, we can use in it. If we feel like we need to make more friends, we feel like we know that we've been isolating because it's been easier to isolate maybe, mm-hmm. but realizing it's hurting us at some point, especially as we get older, as our kids leave the house, as we get towards retirement, that to think, what is the easiest first step I can do? Just to get in the practice of trying to make friends. And maybe it's, you know, one of the things I suggest to people I work with is, so let's just start by collecting smiles.
Oh.
So one day for a week, how many smiles can you collect? Because it's funny. It's like a yawn. People smile back at you when you smile, and it becomes kind of a game, but you get used to making eye contact with people, even though it feels freaky at first, you know, but it's getting into this practice, because even especially with the pandemic and stuff, we've gotten so, and all the strife and disagreements that we have in our country, we've gotten used to just keeping our heads down mm-hmm. and not simply smiling at another person who's in the grocery store.
Yeah. That's the congenial side of life. You just mm-hmm. go about your way. And I've never thought of that, making people smile. I think that's wonderful. So I think that's wonderful.
If you really want to mess with them, you can make them yawn. But I usually chuck. I usually go with smile.
Actually, I'm really good at that. I just start talking. I'm kidding. So now we've talked about changing your story. What would be the next big step after changing your story? What can people do?
It's that the next step is just doing it, you know? It's just going out there and doing it. And there is a book, and it's been said so many times, you know, do something every day that scares you. For a lot of people, that doing something every day that scares them would be talking to someone new or even calling an old friend. People are now afraid to call somebody they already know because they think they're too busy for them.
Oh.
And so it's doing something like that because it has to be intentional. You have to prioritize it. You have to prioritize friendships. You have to prioritize relationships. One of my sayings, so I'm a cancer survivor, and from that moment, I was diagnosed, you as well. And so many of us, right? So many of us. And it doesn't matter whether it's cancer, heart disease, aging, our time is limited. And one of my favorite questions is, if today is the last day of my life, would I be doing what I'm doing now? And you think about this and what it comes down to, yes, work is important. Yes, taking care of your family is important. Finances, very important. It's one of my biggest fears I'm learning about now is finances, right? It's important. But at the end of the day, it's the relationships that matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you have more money than anyone on your block. If you don't have friendships and you're lonely, all that money is not going to make you feel better. So it's the relationships. And as much time you put into everything else, you have to be just as intentional with your relationships. So do the first step. Do what's the easiest thing you can do.
That's wonderful. One of the things I heard similar to that is, hey, if you've got 2 years to live, what are you going to do? Mm. And with that, folks, stick with us. We'll be right back with where Sherry Lead and Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. But today we're talking about sustainable relationships with Sherry Lead. And this has been wonderful. So many ahas, so many golden moments. But you know what? We're 3 months in the year. And I know that scared Sherry because she's like, oh my God.
Yeah, what?
Come on now. But you know what? Being able to do the things that Sherry's talked about to create sustainable habits for that, so you can create that major shift for your social, personal well-being, not only throughout the year, because right now, hey, this is where the resolutions go away. Mm. People have gone off the diet. They stopped working out. I'm going to start spending more money. But how can we make those relationships work, and how can they be sustainable? So that's the big question here, Sarah. Yeah.
So first off, you have to realize its importance, because anything that we don't think is important, if we could say we're going to do these things, but if it doesn't internally, physically, if we don't embody it where it feels important to us, then we're not going to do it. So the first thing is to understand how important this is to our health. Several years ago, our former Surgeon General cited a study that said, you know, loneliness is as bad as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. I mean, whether or not you agree with that study, the fact is, you know, places, when you look at countries where the blue zones are, where people are living the longest, community is a big factor to it. Mm-hmm. So understanding this is about health. This is about health and happiness, both physical health and mental health. So knowing it's just not a to-do list or, a regular resolution, understanding it, believing in it. And I met a woman in Arizona. Her name was Betty, 93 years old. And of course, most of her friends were younger than her. But I happened to go to this women's gathering, and she was like sharp as a tack, steady on her feet. She lives at the top of a hill, apparently. And in Arizona, they call it hiking. I call it walking, but people hike up her hill. And she's outside greeting them, talking to them. And she, at the time I met her, she had a group of men that were in their 40s that would come to her house every Saturday and have coffee with her because she invited them in. But I realized that what sustained her, what's kept her sharp, what's kept her healthy is because she constantly makes friends. I thought, wow, isn't that amazing? If we think of aging as, can we live long enough so that we can make more friends, as opposed to, oh, it's so sad that this person got to this age because they have nobody. And so I thought, okay, I want to live like Betty because I want to be able to enjoy my life to the fullest for as long as I can. And the way to do that is to constantly make more friends, including the younger generation, but realizing that can't start at 93 when everyone's gone. That has to start today. That can't wait till tomorrow. And so knowing that, knowing your end game, which I think for most of us is to live with our minds and our bodies as healthy as possible for as long as possible so we can enjoy life, realizing that importance of friendship, that I hope was the motivator, because to sustain something, you have to be motivated. So that's the biggest key, is the motivation.
Just a couple comments there. I work with a gentleman who is I want to call him an Alzheimer's doctor, but he's an old age doctor. And he says the people who stay physically, socially, and mentally active will live the longest, healthiest lives. And I have a grandma who passed away at 97, and she actually passed away from old age, but she was in a continued care retirement community since her 80s. And she loved that because she was so social.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to her one time, and she's like 95. She goes, "Steve, the problem with me is all my friends have passed away. They're in assisted living. They're in old, but
memory care
and stuff like that. And they don't know where anybody's at." And she goes, "That's my biggest fear, is I want to be able to go sing in the choir. I want to see my friends." She worked at the little bookstore that they had there, people going by and trading.
Wonderful.
And it's her way to socialize with everything. Mm-hmm. And the reality, I have a dad who's 89. And the way he does it is he volunteers at a hospital, and he walks people to the location in the hospital and walks 5 to 7 miles. So he gets the exercise, but he's talking to everybody. I hear stories about all the people he walks in. So it's one of those things. Hey, that's the way they're doing it. So, you know what? I agree with that. I think people should find a way.
But I think your dad also, he's probably calming people down. I mean, if they're at the hospital, you know, having somebody that, especially an older figure, walking them to where they need to be, there's something very fatherly about that. That's just calming. And that's a giving back, right? That's another thing that we do too. When we connect with friendship, and this is about focusing on who we're giving back, we're lifting somebody else up. You know, our presence and our ability to ask questions, to dive deeper, we're lifting another person up. And when we give, there's a book that I love called The Go-Giver. But when we give, whether it's in business and friendships at home, that not only sustains us, that lifts us up to another level.
And you know what? It's interesting. I'm a colon cancer survivor. I know you are a cancer survivor. But there's many people that come out of hospitals with diagnoses that they don't really like. And my dad's told this multiple times, but he says, you know, I told him about your story and you survived. And, you know, I had a very tough story. We're not going into it now, but it was, you know, one of those things where, hey, if he can survive, you can survive. So you can get through this. And, you know, regardless of the diagnosis, when you hear the big C word, even if it's, you know, a level one, it scares everything. Mortality runs across your face.
Absolutely.
The whole time. And so it's nice to have somebody there that's part of their social regimen to help others.
And that's also why we need our friends. That's why I call, you know, my closest friends, my picket fence friends, the ones that hold me up when things get tough, and vice versa. Not all friends need to be that. You know, we have different levels and needs for friends. The definition of friendship is simply mutual admiration for another person. It doesn't come with a lot of weight. And so also knowing that makes it a little easier to make friends, knowing that we don't have to have those expectations that every friend has to be that picket fence friend, but we do need friends to hold us up during these times, that we can talk to, that we can just show up when we look or feel crappy, you know?
Oh yeah. You need somebody there when you're going through a tough time. And you know what? I had the experience that when I went through my cancer as well, we had a large friends group or parents group, and they were shocked because I was a person who was in great shape and my God, he's got cancer. But the interesting part is they all got together, had a garage sale, used the money to buy, you know, professional babysitters, meals, stuff like that. They would, you know, I'm a big Notre Dame fan, and we have friends that are USC fans and Michigan fans. So they all bite back and forth and talk smack, but they all showed up, like four or five of them showed up. Hey, we're here to watch the game with you. Okay. I'm wiped out, tired from chemo and falling asleep, but they're there. Those are your friends. They're the ones that's going to be there just so because they know you need a little extra. So, and you're going to be there for them too. So I think that's wonderful. So what else can people do?
Yeah. So being motivated, and then take your easiest first step. Your easiest first step might be different than my easiest first step. You know, my easiest first step is to join a group and go where I have a lot of people to choose from. Your easiest first step might be to just say hello to somebody at your gym or even at the workplace and ask a colleague for coffee if you want to go to lunch or something, you know, a little more quieter than what I might do. So figure out what's your easiest first step for you. And I just recently became a certified as a meditation teacher. And I thought it was interesting. One of the definitions was meditation teaches you to be an observer as opposed to an absorber. And so if you go through life like that, when you're making friends, if you're observing, then if somebody just says, no, I don't want to have lunch with you, or I'm too busy, you don't take it personally then as you might if you go the other, oh gosh, I can't ask anybody else, I was rejected, you know, everyone's busy. And so just observe, go, okay, you know, that it didn't work out, like, you know, but it wasn't hard to ask, so I'm going to ask somebody else. And and just do the easiest first step. Be motivated, easiest first step. And then number three, the last one is to follow up. You have to follow up, and it needs real FaceTime. You know, the younger generation thinks FaceTime is our phones, FaceTime, but you need face-to-face time and to follow up and to prioritize it like you would any other thing that's good for your health.
Yeah. And I one of the things I was thinking about through this whole thing is to make the time to have the conversations without anything else impeding on it, meaning your brain going, I've got to be here in 20 minutes. I've got to go over here. I've got to get this done. Just kind of let all that go.
And sharing a meal is an excellent way to do it, because since the dawn of time, sharing food has meant safety, survival, and belonging. Everyone's happy when they're eating. We start, our mirror neurons kick in, you know, dopamine. We feel good when we sit down and eat and we share a meal together. And then we have something joint together that's making us happy.
Wow, that's wonderful. You know what? We have a few minutes left. You know what? I know you speak. Do you help individuals? And I know you have a book. Could you tell us a little bit about your Table for 51 book and where people go about getting it?
Sure. That is, you know, it's, you can find it in Amazon. That's probably the easiest. Barnes & Noble. Google my name, Sherry Lead, S-H-A-R-I. Last name is Lead, L-E-I-D. My biggest thing that's happening now that I'm super excited for, that's just coming up in a few weeks towards the end of March, March 27th through the 29th, I have a three-day retreat for women. It's called Flip the Box Retreat, where we work on connection to self, chipping away at those stories that aren't yours anymore, then connection to career, or it could be family, and then finally connection to community. And it's just a very intimate group. We're staying in this beautiful house in Dallas, but it's not about the house. It's about the community that we're going to create through this and what we're going to get. It's going to be magical. And I'm super excited to do that and work with these women there.
That's wonderful. So here's a question. I was just thinking this. There's a lot of people out there that, you know, I've been to similar events like that for professional and stuff like that. I haven't gone to a house to do it, but it's usually at a hotel or something. But there are people there that go, you know what? I don't know about doing that type of stuff. What do you say to somebody like that? You know what? Because a lot of times it's just their own head that's saying no, when they actually should probably be there because they can get great benefit from something.
You know, honestly, I really feel like the right people come when it's right for them. And so I'm not a salesperson by nature. So I'm not a very good salesperson, but I usually have these conversations with someone ahead of time. And I just kind of open it up. You know, this is what I have here to offer. And it feels right for you. That feeling that you feel in your gut, trust your gut at this point. And it's even with friendships, you know, trust your gut. If you feel it in your gut, then there's probably something there for you, because you're right. Our heads get in the way and say, oh, this is going to, I have three. And we start making excuses. And even with friendships that we're supposed to, I know we're not talking about ending friendships, but even with friendships we're supposed to end earlier than later, our gut knows before our head knows. I always say, trust your gut.
You know, it's so funny when you go through something like cancer, you know that really quick, because you find out you have 5-minute friends, 10-minute friends, 30-minute friends, 1-hour friends, 1-day friends, 3-day friends. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
My wife got annoyed with me when I first said that, because I heard it from somebody else. I'm like, oh my God. So you learn real quick to protect yourself from that perspective.
It is. It's true. But, you know, not everyone's meant to stay, and that's okay. We're, you know, if we go on the idea that everyone's your teacher and your student, you're learning from somebody, even if they're there for a minute, even if you're there for a minute.
Sherry, thank you so much for being with us today. I very, very much appreciate this. How can people get connected with your retreat if they'd like to do that?
So my website name is really long, because I had this before branding and all that stuff came into play, but it is animperfectlyperfectlife.com is the website. But again, if you Google my name, Sherry Lead, it'll come up probably as well.
And you know what? We're going to put that website on our website. So when people look at your episode and they want to find out what you're doing, they're going to be able to do that as well. So Sherry, thanks you for being here today. This has been wonderful. So folks, I want to thank you for joining us today. Shari Lee was outstanding about developing those relationships and environment where it's less and less interactive so you can become more interactive, have deeper relationships with friends. With that, I want to thank you for joining us. Look forward to seeing you next time right here on Saving with Steve. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.